Members, we're going to start. We're not at a quorum yet, so we can't officially do work, but I think we can start with testimony this morning. We do have session on the floor at 9:30, so it's my goal to get us out of here early so we have time to make it over to the session. So I'll be trying to move these discussions along pretty quickly. Our first bill up is House File 3596, Representative Foss. I'm going to ask you to come forward and just begin. And I understand you have some folks who are here to testify as well. So they can just sort of be ready, and we'll just keep moving. And when we get to a quorum, we'll officially move the bill. But we can certainly start the discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members, and thank you for hearing our bill. This is a very simple and yet very controversial bill. What this bill basically does is stop the rulemaking and a lot of the memos and things that the Department of Education has been sending out. A lot of the schools don't like a lot of those, especially the volume of them that has been going out. One analogy that's been used is that it's like an eight-lane highway with cars running 90 miles an hour full speed, and this bill basically puts a big stop sign right in the middle of every lane, which might be a little bit of an overreaction, admittedly so. Last night I was discussing this bill with my brother and his wife is a teacher, special ed teacher, and she said, "Oh, this would be fantastic. We need to do something like this." She said, "We just got a new rule that means that when we do an IEP with a student's parents, they have to sign a report or a piece of paper saying that they like the plan. But they can't sign it at the meeting. They have to take it home with them and send it back to us. And every time that happens, the parents are like, you know, what? That's just goofy." But this is, it's just an example of a rule that adds confusion, adds cost, adds to the sense of incompetence of the school system, and adds absolutely no value. And so that's what we're trying to eliminate, is that type of rule that adds no value. So with that, I'll turn it over to my much more qualified than I am testifiers, and thank you again for hearing the bill.
Thank you. Good morning, sir. How are you? Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Darrell Miller. I'm here in the capacity as president of the Minnesota Administrators for Special Education, and I'm here to share with you our organization's support for this bill. I have heard for a number of years now concern from leaders in special education who work in the public schools about concerns that we have about what one of our members chose to refer to as rule creep. The continual addition of not only formal rules but also interpretations and opinions that come out of the department that carry the weight of rule based on in the enforcement activities of the department, and we have a great deal of concern about that. I have a specific story that I wanted to share with you today about a personal experience that I had working in the Robbinsdale School District. We had a situation where there was a complaint filed on behalf of a child who was going to be attending, not even yet attending, but going to be attending our transition program for students who are 18 to 21. And that was investigated, and a decision was made by the department that our transition program was out of compliance. We did not understand how we could be considered to be out of compliance because our program was modeled after some of the exemplary programs in the state in the area of transition. Well, we called the state's transition expert, an employee of the department who came in and met with us and said, "Looks to me like you're doing everything right." We were given a corrective action order, and then subsequently we had two requests for due process hearings from parents who, as a result of the corrective action order that we were given, felt that they had enough cause to move forward in a hearing against us. We settled those two hearing requests, but not without cost. It costs us in the neighborhood of $50,000 to $60,000 when you consider the options that we had to provide as alternatives for those particular families, and then also legal costs on top of that. That is a personal story that I have that, again, leads us to have a great deal of concern about what the purpose is of some of the rules or interpretations that are coming out of the department and how that impact local school districts.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for this opportunity. My name is Elizabeth Lodge Rogers. I'm the Director of Student Services and Special Education for the St. Cloud Area School.
Good morning. I'm going to interrupt just briefly because I'm told that we're at quorum. So I'm going to officially convene. So members, we are officially convened, and the chair moves that House File 3596 be recommended to pass, and we're still trying to figure out where this is going to go, but we'll figure it out in a second. So, but in the meantime, why don't you, and I'm sorry, I missed your name.
Elizabeth Lodge Rogers.
Lodge Rogers. Welcome. Good morning. Please give us your testimony.
Thank you. I think I just want to offer my support for this bill on behalf of special ed directors and special education educators. We experience a lot of frustration with what my colleague referred to, the rural creep, and a quick illustration of that was last year our district was served with, if you will, a complaint was made on our district regarding the use of paraprofessional support or the need for paraprofessional support for a young student with disabilities during his extracurricular adaptive sports activity. This young man was participating in adaptive sports. The team had ensured that the coach and assistant coach and staff working with him were trained in his specific communication device, communication strategies. He was a reluctant participant, but it was something his parents felt was very important. As a result of several very significant behavioral issues, per the agreement that the coach made with families and students on their participation, the student was not allowed to complete the season, was open to begin the next season with our adaptive hockey team, the Slapshots. You probably have heard of them. They are state champions. But anyway, mother made a complaint with the department that stated that we were not fulfilling his IEP because he did have, during the school day, access to a paraprofessional to support him. Our understanding of IDEA 2004 and previous iterations is that extracurricular activities we need to provide access to, which we do, but they are not necessary to provide a free and appropriate public education. And this is a student who was making progress on all his goals and objectives, was being successful as delineated or measured by our objectives in the IEP that the team had developed. Yet, when the complaint was investigated by the department, we were ordered to provide paraprofessional support during adaptive sports activities, extracurricular activities. Now, our district takes very seriously equal access to activities. We provide adaptive sports, which we are not required to do so. We were surprised by the complaint resolution and the corrective action required of us. Furthermore, the illustration on the rule creep was that in the current proposed rules that have been presented by the department, they've added to the least restrictive environment definition participation in non-academic and extracurricular services and activities to the definition of a regular education environment. This is a very different interpretation of participation and access to extracurricular. Quite frankly, if those rules go through with this interpretation, if the 480 students in my district that access paraprofessional support during the school day in order to provide them with a free appropriate public education, if we were required to provide them support during extracurricular activities that they may choose to participate in, that will cost us an additional $585,000 a year.
Thank you, Ms. Boz Rogers. Welcome. Good morning.
Good morning, Chairperson Mariani, members of the committee. I'm Cecilia Dodge. I'm the Director of Special Education for St. Paul Public Schools. I'm actually bringing an example from the Farmington School District this morning. I'm here to urge you to pass House File 3596. I wanted to give you a brief example. There was, first of all, I used to work at the department, and I understand how difficult the work is there, and good people are there doing the work. This is an example where there was a special education complaint filed against the Farmington School District, and the department's ruling on the corrective action. The Farmington School District believed that it exceeded what was existing in rule and law, and they appealed the decision, and they took it to the Minnesota Appeals Court and won. And the appeals court did rule that the corrective action that was ordered due to the complaint did exceed what was in existing rule. So I urge you to try to pass this language to give some clear guidelines to the department as they seek to resolve these difficult issues that happen in special education. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Paul?
I just want to add that late yesterday afternoon we had a very good meeting with Commissioner Segrin, and I really appreciated her comments and her interest in the issue. And I believe that we will probably be able to work out some language that changes this from the 8-lane highway. Instead of having big stop signs, that it changes to a 2-lane highway with a toll booth on it. And the toll booth should be the legislature. And I believe that we can work that out. At least I'm hoping that that's the case. But I was very encouraged by her reaction to and the conversation that we had. And so I believe that they want to do some testifying as well. But I'm very optimistic about that. And I'm hoping that we're able to accomplish that.
Very well. We do have a couple of questioners. Do the members want to wait to hear the rest of the testifiers? Do you want to start? You want to comment? Representative
Abel. No, go ahead.
Okay. Fine.
I just want to commend Representative Paulus for his effort here. And I think you're accomplishing much of what you wanted to accomplish. Several years ago, under a different administration, Anoka wanted to get an ALC, and he had to have two districts to cooperate. All other ones had one. We were the largest school district, and the department didn't want to face the law as going to make them do it. Anybody over 30,000 could get their own ALC, and so the hearing is scheduled for Monday. On Friday, Anoka, surprisingly, was awarded its own ALC just by magic. And I think that just a comment about this commissioner, who I worked with when she was a member here, I think if the commissioner was in charge of everything, you wouldn't get some of these deals going on, and I think that you're getting their attention. And I know that as you know, work with them, I know Alice to be an extremely honorable person and all this, and I don't think she intends that she's going to spend $500,000 on after-school stuff. But I think that every department needs to, you know, just be reminded that they have to be reasonable. And some of the middle-level, really good people get kind of carried away sometimes. So I think that as the discussions go on, I think you'll be successful. Good luck.
Thank you. Representative Wardlaw?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a question. I had some teachers in yesterday, and one was special ed, and talking about, I guess we have a bill coming up that would address that. A report we heard, the task force report.
We do have the next bill up, Representative Wardlaw.
And how does that report? It's going to fix some of these things. How does this bill dovetail in with that one? That was my question.
Yeah, Representative Wardlaw, the next bill up will continue the work of the task force. They were unable to finish their work, and then does repeal, I believe, five statutes that the group had agreed were should be repealed.
So this is in addition to that.
That's correct.
If it's unworkable.
This goes to a process issue, as I understand it, in terms of the department's issuing policy guidelines and bulletins that fall short of actual rulemaking. So I think, you know, it's very important, members, to look at the language on lines 116 to 118, particularly on 118, where it describes that we're talking about a number of issuances from the department that have not that has not been adopted into rules. So we're not venturing, as I read it and understand it, we're not negating the rulemaking process and what comes out of the rulemaking process itself, but things that fall short of that. At least that's my understanding of it. I'm going to ask for Mr. Schneiderman to come. Schneiderwin, I'm sorry. You're okay? Okay. We do want to hear from the commissioners who's asked to testify. Representative Benson, do you want to ask your question now?
I just have a comment.
Please.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It seems that when those of us are proposing bills that are going to require expenditures, we have to ask for a fiscal note. It'd be interesting to see if someone on this committee would propose a bill requiring the Department of Education or any other department that is requiring additional expenditures on someone else to have to issue a fiscal note themselves.
Point well taken, and I think from a little bit I know about the bill as it came forward to us, one of the things that drives us is that districts are feeling a pinch here in terms of these issuances that fall short of rulemaking, but nonetheless have, you know, some weight of authority that are creating some fiscal expectations that they had not expected would happen. Why don't we ask the commissioner to come forward? I believe Mr. Segrin, you've asked to testify, and you're always welcome in this committee. So, good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for giving me a few minutes to testify. As Representative Faust mentioned, we had a meeting last night and talked with the gentleman, and the two women were not present, but gentlemen were present last night to talk about this proposed bill. And I did tell Representative Faust I felt like it was a I didn't say this, but I do feel like it's a machine gun trying to kill a mouse. The law is very broad. What it boiled down to was, you know, the concern about special education and the process that we've been going through with rulemaking. I did assure them that if there are ways that we can continue to work to make sure that we have full communication between ourselves when there are communications that seem to go beyond what we need to do, that we want to make sure that we are not overstepping our bounds. The department in any agency is many times instructed by the legislature to do certain things, gives the commissioner, you know, the authority to, in the form and manner prescribed by the commissioner, to, you know, implement something. The legislature oftentimes does not want to get into the minute details of the day-to-day workings of the implementation of the law. This law would, you know, for example, say that any bulletin that is issued that might be a response to an inquiry from a school district about a law would be unenforceable. Just by the mere presence of us making a comment. And, you know, I told Representative Faustus that if he had passed a certain law, we had, you know, some interpretation, we generally go to that legislator and say, you know, what was your intent? We've had inquiries, work with them. We issue, you know, then what would be the interpretation of that according to the law. But yet, under this provision, you know, we would also have to say, but it's unenforceable. So it's very sweeping, and I think Representative Faust recognizes that, too. So he has said that he wants to go from an 8-lane highway to a 2-lane highway, and we appreciate that, and we want to work with him on that. However, we do have, and I know the next bill that you're going to have is the one that would hold back the rulemaking authority that we have now. I do have some concerns. We do have, under the direction of OSEP, the Office of Special Education, a federal agency, we have some very specific rulemaking that we must do. Otherwise, we are going to be under some serious sanctions. There are other rules that we have attempted to try to conform to that were legislatively directed, and that is, I think, one of the most troubling ones, or the ones that are troubling, I think, a lot of people, and that is the positive behavior intervention rule and the timeout. Those were legislatively, we were legislatively told to do those rules. We have tried to strike middle ground as we were promulgating those rules. If you wish for us not to do those, if there's too much controversy around those, then I would suggest that you you repeal the direction to the department to even promulgate rules on timeout rooms, and it has just become too controversial. So I think, you know, as we're trying to work together and make the attempt, then we need to have, I think, some kind of agreement as to how we're going to move forward with this. I do appreciate the emotion behind this. I support special education wholeheartedly. As you know, I have a son who is handicapped, but I also was on a school board. I also know the physical or the fiscal realities of school districts. I know how difficult IDEA is to implement. We have the same pressures on us as the school districts have on them. We're trying to fulfill the IDEA intent, and oftentimes the federal government doesn't give us clear direction and leaves it up to us, and we try to interpret it so that we don't get in trouble, and thus you all don't get in trouble, or your school districts don't get in trouble. So it's kind of this very difficult position that we all try to work through. I deeply respect what the school districts go through, want to work with them, appreciate Representative Faust's machine gun that has been aimed at us, but I would ask that that we have maybe a little bit pulling back from the broad sweep of his bill and try to work together, and I have pledged to him to do that. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Commissioner. We have several members, Representative Erickson and then Representative Rudolph.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Segrin, how often do you as a commissioner issue any one of these items listed in this proposal, a policy, a guideline, a bulletin, a criterion, a manual standard? How often does that occur that you have to issue those? Are we running rampant with those because of IDEA, or is this maybe an overreaction?
Representative Erickson, I couldn't tell you personally how, I don't personally issue many of the memos or things. Most our staff who has the knowledge and the implementation of all the individual issues, whether it's a financial question that comes from Dr. Meltzer's department, whether it's a No Child Left Behind issue, whether it's a testing issue, whether it's a special ed issue, whether it's a facilities issue, we have multiple areas that we manage every single day. I think that our department is cautious about what they do. We have many, many questions that come from school districts probably every day, wanting some kind of clarification about what they should do. And many times it is just a simple clarification of instruction. And we would issue that. What I'm concerned about is that, you know, does this prohibit us from even saying, yes, this is what you should do. This is the law. This is, you know, what we are doing, or what you need to do. So we try to be cautious about that. Many of these don't come to my, you know, up to my attention, because I certainly trust the expertise of our different folks. Occasionally something does come up to my attention, and when it's a big issue, I do try to work them out and be respectful of all parties.
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Segrin, in the testimony prior, one of the testifiers mentioned an IEP plan that had to be taken home for the parents to sign rather than having them sign in the presence of the team. Would you comment on whether or not that is required practice, or was this an anomaly?
Mr. Chair and Representative Erickson, I would probably like to defer to Amy Roberts, who is in the audience. She would know. She's part of the compliance. I will just say, as a special ed parent, I never have had to do that. We signed in the presence. We could do it any time, you know, whether at home. If we wanted to take it home, we could and review it. But oftentimes, as parents, we just signed right there after we had our IEP. So I'm not sure that there's any kind of... And Ms. Roberts, if you want to... Ms. Roberts is saying I'm right. So there is no requirement to have parents take something home and then bring it back again.
Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Amy Roberts with the Compliance Division at the Department of Education. The Commissioner is correct in that there wouldn't be a requirement per se to take the IEP home. The exception that I can think of is if the parent hadn't had a chance to review the IEP and wanted the opportunity to read it over, look it over before they would commit to signing to it. I understand that there may be some confusion or some direction that that members of my staff may have given districts that somehow this concept may have gotten mixed up. However, I've never been contacted by a director from a school district to ask about this particular provision, so I can't state with, you know, absolute definitiveness that yes, this is what we're saying versus no, this is not what we're saying.
Mr. Chair, one more question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Roberts, when you're promulgating rules and you send hearing notices, would you say that by and large there's a good response to folks wanting to testify for or against a rule, or have we become too apathetic and we're just allowing things to go ahead? Because I know I respond often, at least if it happens to be the Board of Teaching, where I have a great interest, I'll respond with my comments. I have not attended a hearing for a while, but are we missing something here so that we haven't empowered parents or faculty enough to respond to these announcements and get their say out at that point? So the rule probably isn't then promulgated?
Briefly, Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair and members, for this particular rule package, for example, the department went through an informal process before it began the formal process, where the drafts of the rules were posted on the website. We had a stakeholder group that came together to review the drafts of the proposed rules before they were proposed. The entire process was over a year in the making. The formal process, we had a very good response to requests for comments, both through the Office of Administrative Hearings, OAH, who oversees the rulemaking process, and directly to our office. We also had a spot on our website. We received many written comments, and the hearing that was held on these proposed rules was approximately 8 hours long, over 200 people were in attendance at the hearing. I do know some people felt they didn't have an opportunity to speak at a particular hearing, so that they submitted written comments afterward. Again, that hearing is overseen by OAH, the Office of Administrative Hearings, and that process is run by an administrative law judge.
Okay. Representative Erdahl, Representative Greiley, Representative Benson, Representative Heger, and Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Ms. Roberts, Commissioner Segrin, I think maybe each of you have touched on it a little bit, but you know, we have a lot of people who maybe are new to this committee or aren't familiar with this. Could you give us just a quick summary of what the rulemaking process is? How does it work?
Mr. Chair.
Members, I don't want to do a 101 on rulemaking, so this is going to be a very quick response. Please.
Let's see if I can give a very quick 101 on rulemaking.
We can have a hearing on rulemaking, Representative Erdahl.
The rulemaking process has a very formal, it is spelled out in the Administrative Procedures Act, Chapter 14 of Minnesota Statutes, and it begins basically with a notice. There are a series of notices any department has to give before it begins the rulemaking process. that basically says, we are going to begin the rulemaking process. Once you've given that notice, you move to actually putting in the proposed rules, so the language is out and it's published and it goes into the state registrar. That's the very, you know, formal process piece. And again, all of these have particular set timelines that guide the process throughout, with each period having a certain amount of time for the public to comment and to review what the department is moving forward on. Generally speaking, some type of hearing is held, again, overseen by OAH, where comments come in, you have an opportunity to testify, and then the rule gets submitted to the hearing officer, which is the point we're at right now with our particular rules. And the hearing officer reviews the rule to determine whether the department met its standard of need and reasonableness to actually promulgate the rule. The hearing officer will make some type of recommendation back to the department about whether or not we've met that burden. And then the department has, again, this timeline by which it has to respond to actually move the rule from a draft to take effect as a law.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And generally, how long does that take?
Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair, members, depending on the size of the rule and the complexity of the rule, the overall process probably, with everything moving exactly due on time, which I have yet to see happen, is about 9 months. Generally speaking, it's a good 12 to 15 months for this entire process to move forward.
Thank you. Professor Garland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erdahl and others, I've said many times in this committee, one of my first jobs here at the legislature was to chair the Administrative Rulemaking Subcommittee. And one of my first things that I was passionate about doing was shortening up the rulemaking process to save money and make it more clear and transparent for the public, and it was my first of many big failures. Legislators wanted a long, huge rulemaking process because they had this notion that there wouldn't be rules if we had a really hard process. But in fact, then we have these end runs which turn into guidelines, bulletins, blah, blah, blah. And then they didn't have the public process. So if anyone wants to go back and work on what many other states have, the review and comment rulemaking, which is shorter, cheaper, and easier for the public to follow, tell me and I will second author it in a flash. But in the meanwhile, we are left then with many agencies, and the Department of Education is no exception, where they don't want to go through that. They don't have the money or the staff to do it, so they take the next best thing and they issue their edicts through non-promulgated rules. But then they also want their cake and have and eat it too by having them have to be followed, and that isn't legal. We ran into this with Representative Faust's subcommittee on facilities when we found that in trying to be more flexible with square footage for schools, as Representative Junkie wants to do in Wilmer, well, no, you can't do that, or you'll have to pass your bonds by 60% instead of 50. But there's nothing with the force and effective law that says that other than department guidelines. So I compliment Representative Faust for coming forward. I love flamethrower bills that really get the juices flowing and get a good discussion. And this is this one works for that. A-plus, Representative Faust. But I think there's a lot of truth in this, and quite frankly, what I would like to see the department do is have guidelines and bulletins and things to be helpful to districts. I don't like to see the department be the enforcer as much as being a resource. This is what the legislature meant. If you want to follow the law, you could do this, 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 or this. Give options, give help, instead of saying, off with your head if you didn't follow Rule 4.7A. And I think that that's the discussion we should be looking towards. And I hope that we get that going by doing that here. I'll just close with one example of a rule that went amok. And that was the profile of learning. It was something I strongly supported, having a broad-based curriculum and not just reading, writing, arithmetic, and test the heck out of every kid, which we have now.
But it ran amok because it was way too much dictating, and the chief offender was the packets of learning that the department recommended, but somehow conveyed the impression that they had to be followed when they never had to be followed. They were just suggestions for districts that didn't have time or resources to develop their own. And so I think this is a worthy discussion, and I hope that we don't just laugh and say it's too big so we can't do anything about it, because I think Representative Faust is onto something, and I'm glad the commissioner is willing to work with him.
Thank you, Representative Greiling. And you are, in many ways, our resident expert in the legislature on these issues. And I have to say that I love the metaphors. I felt like turning the heat down here, you know, in a second with the flamethrower. But you're known more for your successes and less for your failures in this legislative body.
Mr. Chair.
Briefly, Commissioner.
Thank you. And thank you for your indulgence. Representative Greiling and I are good friends, so when she begins to talk, I begin to listen. And one comment that she did make, referenced the process for looking at capital facilities projects. And in statute, we were directed to create review and comment process with no direction except to do a review and comment process. If the legislature wants us to be more specific about whether it's 60% or 50% and what triggers that, then the legislature needs to make that clear. Otherwise, we are left with trying to create a systematic, fair process, which we have tried to do, and then we have really not necessarily any authority except to have a process that has been directed. So I would beg you also, because I think the legislature a lot of times puts upon agencies the decisions that they do not want to do themselves. So we get into being criticized from school districts because, you know, we've had to do this, and you've said, okay, well, you know, wink, wink, you take care of it, because we don't want to make we don't want to get into fights in our own school district. So you also need to step up to the plate, and if you wish to be more specific, then please do so. We'll be glad to do that. We are trying to do everything we can to fulfill your direction, and we're trying not to, certainly from my perspective, trying not to overstep what our authority should be. And I just want to clarify, I was not the commissioner when the profile was learned. And I agree with Representative Bradley.
I don't think anyone's ever accused you of that, Commissioner. Representative Greiling.
Thank you. Just very briefly, I agree with Commissioner Segrin. Whenever the legislature is wimpy, we send it off. Any hot potatoes go to the department. We used to give them to the Board of Education. They got the diversity rule, the integration rule, they got the profile, and by the time they got done doing what we were afraid to do and what we told them to do, we abolished them.
Representative Buxton and Representative Hagrick, and we're going to move to vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Real quickly here, although I have a question for the commissioner, but I have to respond to this thing about profiles and learning, because I was one of the victims of that program when I was teaching. And at one point, I remember a principal standing up and telling the faculty we had to send every single daily lesson plan to the Department of Education for their review and comment. And we were ready to format a revolution, even in Edina. So.
Professor Benson, you would have been in good tradition with the folks at the Boston Tea Party.
That's right. And unfortunately, in some people's views, that's the reason I became involved politically here. But anyway, Commissioner, I was listening to the previous testimony from a representative of one of the school districts indicating that a directive from the department actually led to an increased expenditure on their part of over $500,000. And I'm just wondering, is there a process in your department to consider the impact, the financial impact on local districts of these kinds of promulgations? If it reaches $500,000, do you make a decision as to whether that is a wise directive, or does someone make a decision, or is it just sent out willy-nilly? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Benson, in regard to that particular directive, I did ask Ms. Roberts, if that was an IDEA-related directive, and she did indicate that it is an IDEA responsibility. So, and we do not have financial impact upon rules or a trigger by which, that would trigger something coming up to me to say, do we stop doing that or not? If it's an IDEA rule that, is very clear from them, we don't have any choice but to implement that, and in the district, we don't have any choice but to implement it. Otherwise, we would be under sanctions and in trouble. But, I understand where you're going, and understand, what's happening in the districts in regard to special education.
Just a real quick. It seems that when these types of directives are sent out, I think it would be incumbent upon the Department of Education then to come back to the legislature and say, we really haven't sufficient resources to implement these directives from the federal government or whomever it is. By the way, why the federal government is sending orders down to the states, I have a problem with anyhow, philosophically. But the thing is that these are dramatic financial impacts on local districts, and it seems to me incumbent upon the department then to come to the legislature and ask for additional funding. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Heigerken.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Granley, and I agree with you 100%. You did touch upon some of the things I wanted to touch upon. At the same time, perhaps within the Department of Education, the number one complaint I receive from school boards and from superintendents is the handling of the special ed issue. All of the superintendents, the school districts, I go around school boards to try a couple times a year, and they all have praise for your commissioner in all areas, and the only one that they do have some exception to is the special ed. And I sometimes think that we perhaps look at the federal law and probably enforce it more so than the other states do. And this is a discussion we've had with the No Child Left Behind as well committee. But I think that Representative Faust has a good bill here. I think we need some directive from the special ed department. I think that's one area that does need to be reined in, because there's a lot of complaints there, and I always kind of compare that department to the DNR. I have a lot of problems because we need more directives within the DNR as well. But with that said, I just want the commissioner to know that you are very well respected out there, at least in outstate Minnesota.
Thank you. Members, any other? Representative Powell.
Thank you very much, and thank you again for hearing this bill. I just want to comment that the teacher teaches at Rockford School District, where and it's a very new change where the signing of these IEPs are at. So that if somebody wants to check with them, they're certainly welcome to do so. This bill is really about the role of who writes policy. And it's my belief that the legislature is supposed to write the policy and the department is supposed to interpret it. And unfortunately, the feeling of a lot of people in education in the state of Minnesota is that the department has really crossed over that line, and not by just a little bit, but significantly, especially as Mr. Representative Heigerken says, in the area of special ed. And so, I'm very encouraged by the comments of Commissioner Segrin to sit down and work out something that will be better for the department, better for the schools, better for the legislature, but most importantly, better for the children of the state of Minnesota. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And members, I appreciate the discussion, the conversation today. I appreciate the commissioners candor with us as a legislature. Of course, you sat on this side not too long ago, and there certainly are a number of issues where it's not just the department, but perhaps our body as well, that they're complicit in some of the problems that are being created out there. And, of course, there's the big shadow of the federal government and its mandate. Members, I will renew my motion that House File 3596 be recommended pass. And Representative Faulks, we're going to refer this to the Government Ops Committee. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Faulks.
Thank you very much.
Representative Hillstrom, members, we're in session at 9:30. I don't think we're going to get through two bills because I did promise I'd try to get you out of here early enough so that you can walk over to session and be there on time. So I don't think we're going to get to the Representative Peterson's bill. However, you know, I'm going to jump around here just a little bit. Representative Hillstrom, if you just hold off for a second.
Right.
Representative Peterson, you had a testifier who's a teacher in our Rosemont Apple Valley school. I know how difficult it is to be able to carve out time if you're teaching in the middle of the day to do this. And I'm wondering, Representative Peterson, even though we're not going to move your bill at this date, if we might not want to take the testimony of this individual, and we'll store that in our memory so that when we do take up your bill, which will probably be on Friday, we can then have that. Is that okay with you? So,
they're all really good.
No, they're not.
Mr. Peterson, why don't you come forward and just very, very, very quickly tell us what your bill is about, and then we'll ask Ms. Kate Smith to come down. We'll take 5 minutes here, and then we'll get on to our bill, or rather the Hillstrom bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, this feels a bit like deja vu because I've been here before on this particular bill, and it really deals with the issue of fairness and clarity around the what's known as the Q comp, alternative compensation, whatever terminology you wish to put with it, and it concerns again the issues that the teachers, bargaining units, and I think in some instances even superintendents and districts have in determining what really should be happening with the Q comp, and the goals, I think, are everybody wants to have alternative compensation or Q comp. They want it to work, they want it to expand, but there are concerns, and that's why we're here today. And so this, I'm going to let the let you introduce yourself, because this is a teacher I know from Apple Valley, Rosemont School District, and so she will be one of the people who will be testifying.
You're very welcome, and I wanted to honor that you, the time that you took to be here, so I want to make sure we get your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Kate Smith. I'm a fourth grade teacher in Rosemont Apple Valley Egan, and I very much appreciate the opportunity to speak, because my students would be very disappointed if I came back and said I missed class and didn't do anything. So I appreciate the opportunity. They don't like it when I'm gone. So we've had discussions in Rosemont Apple Valley Egan about alternative pay systems for over 20 years. And we have always come to the conclusion that the systems we came up with were too cumbersome or too expensive, and we couldn't implement them. So when QComp, and I know there's ATPPS, but we've always called it QComp, so that's what's comfortable for me. But when QComp was introduced with monies available, we jumped at the chance to have a problem, to trying to solve this problem and deal with the leaders of our district to explore what we could do with alternative pay structures. A steering committee of over 20 teachers and administrators worked together for over 20 months to develop a plan and create an application that was not accepted twice by the Department of Education, but that we felt would work really well in our district. The concerns from the department were the 60% pay increase tied to student performance and the existence of salary pay, salary matrices based on education and experience, and automatic step advancement. If it were not for the positive relationship between Dakota County United Educators and District 196, I believe we would have abandoned the process. Thanks to our superintendent, John Curry, and our union president, Jim Smola, they encouraged us to continue to work and come up with a plan that the department would approve and that we could work with. part of the problem was is we understood the law, only part of teachers' pay increases would be tied to student performance. 60% of pay received from the QCOMP program would be tied to student performance, not 60% of all pay increases. We also felt that steps and lanes based on education and experience were acceptable under the law if the additional monies were tied to student performance. In the end, we were able to work with the Department of Ed and come up with a plan that we could implement for 2 years. But after 2 years, which is the end of the 2009 school district, we will have to transition away from our current salary schedule. And at this time, I do not believe that the teachers in our district will support a program that eliminates steps and lanes and ties 60% of our pay to student performance. I should say 60% of any increase in our pay to student performance. Changing the way teachers are paid is a huge project. But teachers are not afraid to change. We change every day. We adapt our lessons every day to meet the needs of our students. We're also not afraid of accountability. The dedicated men and women I work with are reflective practitioners who work together to meet the needs of all their students. We hold each other accountable. Our parents of our students hold us accountable. What we are afraid of is a method for determining our pay increases that is unfair or leads to competition between colleagues. This file allows districts to continue to pay teachers based on education and experience, and it continues to tie some of a teacher's pay increases to student performance. With these modifications to the current law, I believe our district will be able to create a QCOMP plan that is agreeable to teachers and good for the education of our students. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Schmidt. I appreciate, again, you taking your time, and I appreciate the diligence of which you and your colleagues have approached this issue. You haven't adopted a position of merely opposing any kind of reform here. You're looking for something, as I hear, that's workable and fair for you and your members. Members, we're not going to hear this bill today. I know that the department wants to offer testimony on this, and they will. We're going to hold this over until Friday. However, Representative Heiberg, and I think you have a question for Ms. Schmidt.
Thank you, Ms. Chair, and just thank you for bringing the bill forward, because I do have one school district in my legislative district that's in litigation in regards to the same very issue. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you again, Ms. Schmidt, and Representative Peterson. We'll take your bill up. Hopefully, we can properly post it tomorrow when we meet. Representative Hillstrom, House File 3621. The chair moves House File 3621 be recommended to pass, and I think we're going to the floor.
We are, Mr. Chair.
Very well. That'll be my motion.
All right.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have one amendment. It is the H3621A1 amendment, and I believe all sides agree with this amendment. So.
Very well. Representative Hillstrom, I will move H3621A1 amendment. And members, all in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The bill is before us the way you want it to be.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is an extension of the task force that worked last year that you've already heard the report on. I believe that it has come up with some compromises that are reflected in this bill. And it extends it, and it clears up a little. I had thought that the department would be a voting member. They were not, and so this allows the parent side to have an additional member to make the votes equal. I just want them to continue their work. It also gives them the ability to modify the rules and negotiate about that rather than saying the rules should stay or the rules should go. And so, Mr. Chair, that's the end of my presentation. There are people from both sides that want to say they support this. There's another amendment out there that I don't support. I don't know who has it or who's offering it, but
very well. The members, I want to point out that in the amendment that we had adopted, one of the things that it did is remove, if I understand it right, it removed that category of exceed.
Correct.
That the task force was working on. We heard testimony the other night about the vagueness of what that meant, and a number of members on all sides of the issue were very uncomfortable with trying to interpret what it meant to exceed. and didn't find it particularly useful a direction. So.
Mr. Chair, it's actually the or expand word that it takes out. The exceed was clear, I believe.
Oh, okay.
The or expand.
I apologize. All right. Members, and you have a testifier?
I believe that both sides have testifiers here. I don't know if they want to come to the table.
Good. We have Daryl Miller from Robbinsville Area Schools, Darren Kermit from New Prague, and Elaine Key. Okay. Who's first up here?
Okay. Mr. Chair and members, I'm Elaine Keith, and I'm here on behalf of the Coalition for Children with Disabilities, and I'd like to thank Representative Hillstrom for working with us to address the concerns that we had about the task force, and the bill as amended does that, and we support it.
I'm sorry, Ms. Keith. You're done. Wow.
I was told to be quick, Mr. Chair.
That's a record. Mr. Miller.
As I said, I'm Daryl Miller, and I'm president of MACE, and I'm here representing our professional organization, and we are here to speak in support of the bill as well. I just want to remind you that we have a strong belief that the original intent of the bill is something that we need to follow through on in terms of looking at where it is that Minnesota exceeds federal requirements, federal mandates, and to minimize the rules and statutes that we would have in Minnesota that do not provide extra value to the opportunities that we provide for students with disabilities. So we want to continue to look at those rules and, again, with the focus on minimizing and only having essential rules that are unique to Minnesota that potentially might exceed federal, but, again, with the focus on what's the impact of those rules in terms of the work for teachers and also the cost to local school districts. When I talked about rule creep before, I want to give you an example of the district in which I work, where in the past 10 years, because of the requirements that we have in Minnesota, above and beyond, not only the federal requirements, but the Minnesota requirements, we have spent on up to this current year now an average of about $800,000 in additional staffing to hire staff to provide support for teachers around the due process requirements that we have in Minnesota. These are teachers on special assignment who do not provide direct instruction to students. They provide support to other teachers around how to do the work that needs to be done in order that we do not find ourselves facing a due process complaint or a hearing request on the part of parents. And even with that, we have still had challenges in our school district that have created additional burdens for teachers. So this is really important legislation, and we think it's important that we follow through and continue the effort to minimize and only have those pieces of additional Minnesota statute and rule that add value to what we do in Minnesota in terms of programming for students.
Very well. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify? Questions to the members? Representative Eric.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if there's a question here, but the IDEA was reauthorized just within the last 2 years, I believe, because I know that I spent a lot of time visiting with Representative Klein, who served on the committee, to ask him to take a close look at what the federal government was demanding of states. But I have to say this about the state of Minnesota, as I look at what other states do in regard to special education. We take very, very seriously ensuring that our special needs students get the same opportunities as all other students. And I think often what happens is that because we, and I maybe shouldn't say we, the department takes so seriously what comes from the federal government that we want to ensure those opportunities, you know, that sometimes maybe we get carried away. They get carried away, excuse me. And then about the we, or about us, The legislature, what I've noticed, and I think Representative Briley touched on this earlier, is that the laws that we pass sometimes are so ambiguous that I'm not surprised that the department sometimes does get carried away in promulgating rules, for example, or trying to interpret what we pass. So, you know, in a nutshell, I think Minnesota is a fine state in regard to upholding the rule of law for making sure our special needs students get the same opportunity. And I hope that the extension of this task force will bring to conclusion some of the issues that we've had, because we don't need to expand, I don't think, in many instances, but we do need to be thoughtful about what decisions we come to for the sake of those children.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. We did hear good testimony the other night from mediator involved with the task force, as well as from a broad array of advocates who were involved in the task force. And I have to say, I was quite impressed by the hard work that this group put into the work, the approach, the seriousness in which they approached their work. And this bill, in large degree, reflects some of that, you know, with the repeal of these four statutory requirements that the group was able to arrive at consensus on. So I think it reflects the level of diligence and seriousness that you speak of, Representative Erickson, as part of our culture here in the state of Minnesota. Any other comments or questions? Representative Welty.
Thank you, Chair Mariani and Sue, Representative Hillstrom, or to either of the testifiers. I just want to make sure that the repealer, the tuition billing requirements for non-resident students, isn't going to have a financial impact upon the district.
Mr. Miller.
I think that portion of the legislation, I think what that will do is hopefully make things easier for school districts in terms of how we deal with the financial, the billing component of the tuition billing process. Well, we are struggling now with issues around systems that don't speak to each other in terms of the data management systems that we have, and unfortunately we're having problems in terms of how the bills are arriving to us in the school districts and how we are reconciling the costs associated with tuition billing. So we think that this is actually going to be a positive impact on school districts.
Thank you, Ms. Miller. And again, these are the four consensus areas that the task force arrived at. Any other comments or questions? Representative Gutlaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be brief. To any of the testifiers and Representative Hillstrom, I understand there were more than four areas of agreement coming out of this task force. Why are those not reflected in this bill as well? Why just these four?
Mr. Yes. Miller.
Four areas of agreement. I think that when you talk about, as Mr. Kermes has talked about in a previous testimony, when we're looking at a consensus model around where there was agreement and what that agreement was, probably the four areas were where we believe that was more of a consensus model in terms of what the agreement was as opposed to less than that. So when we look at how do we move forward, obviously, we want to work collaboratively with the parents and the advocacy organizations in terms of looking at where can we minimize and what can we do away with, and what are the things that we can agree we want to hold on to, and then what are those things that we are going to struggle with as we're going through trying to reconcile it.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think part of it is the previous task force only was allowed to say we're going to keep the whole thing or we're going to eliminate the whole thing rather than we're going to modify it to make it more workable. And so I think once they have that ability, I think we'll have a much better product in the end.
Thank you for the question, Representative Gutlaw. Anyone else? Anyone else who wishes to testify on the bill? Ms. Schwab. Morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Grace Paul with Minnesota School Boards Association. Mr. Chairman, I was one of the people who were on this committee as it went forward. There were other subjects that we did come to a substantial agreement on, a 7-2 vote, one of them being shared time. We had some real concerns about that going forward on both sides for the fact that we've got a court case that basically says if you have a special needs child going to a private school, they deserve 100% reimbursement over public school kids. And presently how school districts handle that now is we take the amount of special needs students in a district, even the ones in charter schools and private schools, and divide it out on a per child basis. It's sort of the fairest way to fund that federal money. And this court case brings that in that practice into challenge. And so it's a little bit of a frustration to have one side that gets a much better support, financial support, at the law center for public schools and special needs. So we're still working on that piece out there, trying to come back with a solution from all of us.
Representative Grayley.
Thank you, Mr.
I'm
Chair. I agree with Ms. Schwab very much, and I did notice that in our, a big cost driver in our state rules that exceed the federal government standard are what we do for private schools in the area of special ed. And, you know, it's one thing to argue should they get the same, but when they get better than the public schools, and then they, sometimes we hear how they have low costs compared to the public schools, and why are they able to do that when these stupid public schools spend all this money? Well, when you look at what we're subsidizing for them for special ed compared to what we give to our private schools, that is a rub of the first degree. And I'm glad to hear that the task force is agreeing on this substantially, and I hope that more will come out of this area, because you have to be fair. And we all know that the special ed budget is taking away from regular ed students. And so I think we have to really wrestle with these issues. And I'm so glad that this task force, which is a very thoughtful group, I've met many of the members, and they're very thoughtful, very hardworking, and I'm glad we're continuing and giving them the tools that Representative Hillstrom has worked on so they don't just say yes or no. They can make some sense of it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Schwab, could you provide us with some of the detail, or maybe not detail, but the analysis of private versus public versus charter that you used or used to make the statement you just did? Because I was not aware that we had this unfairness going on, and if I could actually read and study what some examples are, I think we could have a more thoughtful discussion.
We will, of course, hopefully come back to this issue at a future date, if, assuming the task force is able to continue its work and continue to vet this more carefully. But Ms. Schwab.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, I would be happy to supply you with the court case and give you that background, and then the statutes, Minnesota statutes that really show how that is done, and for your background.
All right. Members, the chair renews his motion that House File 3621 as amended be recommended to pass. This is going straight to the floor, Representative Hilton. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. Members, we will convene again tomorrow. We'll be hearing the department technical bill and a couple of other bills, including Representative Peterson's bill. So. Yeah, we'll do it tomorrow. Until then, we're adjourned.